G'day, this is Stevic from 12 Foot Ninja. You are listening to Pommas Gabble, the podcast for powermetal.de.
Ja, hallo liebe Hörer und Hörerinnen von Pommes Gabel, den Podcast von powermetal.de. Wie ihr eben schon gehört habt, sind wir heute nicht alleine. Ich bin hier mit unserem Chefredakteur Peter und Gitarrist Steve McKay von der Band 12 Foot Ninja, weshalb dieses Interview auch in Englisch sein wird, da 12 Foot Ninja aus Australien kommt.
That was a brilliant introduction.
Thank you. Yeah. Steve, nice to have you in our podcast. Please tell me, how are you doing? How is the band doing?
Not too bad. I think we're still in lockdown. It's actually broken a world record for the longest lockdown in history, I believe, okay. In Melbourne, Australia. So we're really looking forward to going to the pub and, you know, interacting with other people and doing all the normal stuff, but most importantly, rehearsing. We haven't been able to get together to rehearse for a while, but apparently in a couple of weeks, the lockdown lifts and we get to return to some normalcy.
But that's different from part to part in Australia, right? Because I think I saw already concerts from Caligula's Hall streamed live with, you know, with crowd. So
yeah, they're in a different part. Like we're in Melbourne, which is kind of the, I think we're the leaders of lockdown.
Yeah.
The lockdown leaders. Yeah. We've been sort of shut down a little bit longer, which usually wouldn't bother me because I'm kind of introverted in a way, but after a year, it starts to do something to your head, I think.
Yeah, very true.
Has the lockdown and the pandemic in some way influenced the record or the recording itself?
Well, a lot of it was done just prior to, we were kind of ready to go just before COVID hit.
Okay.
And, you know, when that came, we sort of made the decision to not put it out in a vacuum, you know, because we kind of anticipated that this would be a significant thing. So we used that sort of time to focus energy into other aspects of the project and do things that we wouldn't have normally been able to do. I especially took on a bunch of projects that I've always wanted to do and just didn't have the time, like a video game, for example. Yeah, so, I mean, we tried to turn the situation, you know, into a positive, if that's possible. But, yeah, I mean, I think everyone is really looking forward to just getting back out there and seeing other people. You know, there's this sort of renewed appreciation for people, like, and just interacting with them. And you know, a big part of, I think, any musician, you know, any musician's motivation is to actually experience what they create through the listener. Like, so it's been very foreign to have all this content and only just be releasing it now. Like, it comes out this week after sitting on it for so long, you know, so that's going to be exciting.
Yeah. Can imagine. You have been very busy.
Obviously.
There it is.
That is, yes. I had to say it because with Vengeance, you are not just releasing a new album. There's always, there's also the Project Vengeance. So 12 Foot Ninja releases a book, a comic, and a video game. Please tell our podcast listeners what's behind every bit of this project.
Okay, well, how long have we got? I'll try and keep it.
You have 3 minutes.
I'll try and keep it short. Listeners won't be able to see it, but this is one of the fantasy fiction novels that I'm holding up, which is the size of a brick. It's gigantic. This has been a work in progress for probably this, the writing of this, the author Nick Snelling's been writing nonstop for about 5 years nonstop. We've got this one. And then, you know, when you get to the end, there's another one ready to go.
Okay.
So that is an unbelievable undertaking alone. And how that, I mean, that kind of starts way back in 2007. You know, I came up with 12 Foot Ninja, wrote a story, and I met Well, I knew Nick through, he was actually a music journalist, and he wrote a particularly good review, and I liked his writing so much that, you know, we kind of became friends and kept in contact. And then I came to him to help me with a pitch bible for an animated series, and he started writing and fleshing out what I'd done. And then I keep explaining, it's like that scene in Forrest Gump when he starts running, but then he never stops. He just keeps running. And that's kind of what happened with the book. He just went sideways and built this immense universe and all these characters and different tribes and all this kind of stuff that interact with the protagonist, Kiyoshi, who is the 12-foot ninja. And it was meant to come out with the last album, but he just was just kind of possessed by this story. So now it's ready to come out. So that's one part of it. The second part started with this short comic, like it's 30 pages or something that I came up with for my guitar company. But then I sort of introduced this, it's part of the many worlds interpretation, you know, the Schrödinger's cat concept of like multiple branches of reality. And I followed on from that and wrote the graphic novel, which comes out, you know, with the album. You can actually get it now with the same name as the album, Vengeance. And this is following on from that many worlds interpretation, where you can have this immense kind of almost Game of Thrones like retro futuristic feudal Japanese kind of mega saga. You can have the band, and you can have all of the creations from the music videos all coexisting in this kind of interdimensional junction point. So yeah, that was kind of something we worked on. And we've also got a card game with the 220-sided dice. It's like a mate of mine is a psychiatrist in a prison, and he wrote this really cool game. Yeah, so that's another thing. And the video game was just something I took on and kickstarted it, and now that's my job for the next year, is making a video game. So yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of throwing everything we possibly can at storytelling and content creation. And yeah, I mean, it, to me, it's kind of symbiotic with the music. Like if I just did music, I think I'd be bored. If I just did one style of music, I think I'd be bored. So everything that's going on is kind of like a bit of a meta version of 12-foot Ninja itself, you know, like this multi sort of disciplined way of expressing creativity, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
Is that, did I do good? Was that all right? How long was that?
It was perfect.
Yes. And I mean, that's very impressive. I mean, and that you focus everything about around 12-foot Ninja, you know, and don't compartmentalize it, you know, and say, okay, I write a book and I do a comic and I have a band, but that you know that they're all interacting. I think that's the most astonishing part for me.
Yeah, well, I think the whole idea of the 12-foot Ninja story is really based around a moral philosophy, for lack of a better term. When you're dealing with principles, it's kind of inescapable to, you know, keep creating within that world. You know, that was the plan all along, is to make this sort of have substance and depth beyond just kind of the storytelling equivalent of eye candy, where it's just kind of, there's nothing really behind it. It's just a bunch of pictures and stuff. This, I never really wanted to do that. I wanted something with a lot of depth. So I'm hoping people will learn that when they read this. There's a lot of kind of philosophical ideas that are available if you're looking. And yeah, I always like the idea that 12-foot Ninja could just operate on the surface for people who like the music, but if they want to dive underneath, they'll realize they can just keep going down. It never really ends.
You have, for three very different songs, very different videos.
Yes.
For A Long Way Home, that's a video that is just with a lot of going on.
Yep.
Then you have Start the Fire, that tells a bit of apocalyptic storytelling. And
yep.
Over and Out is a short movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite video and why?
Oh, wow. It's hard to answer. I really like Long Way Home because we had a lot of fun with that. And I guess COVID kind of afforded us time to go over and above. There's so many hidden messages in that music video.
Yeah.
including, like, you know, not just to give something away, a little tip, a little spoiler. There's a part where Nick is kind of in a padded cell with a pile of his own heads.
Yeah.
And they're actually blinking Morse code.
Okay.
There's a message. So no one's picked that up yet. So I thought I'd lift the lid on that.
To all our podcast listeners, you have please look at this video and tell us what the Morse code is.
Yeah, work it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just a lot of fun Easter eggs. And Ben Davies, a friend of ours who we collaborate on a lot of videos, you know, he put in a crazy amount of work because we shot it all on green screen. And this was kind of the genesis of the video game because I drew all the backgrounds.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, oh, I've drawn all these backgrounds. I may as well make a video game. You know, little did I know, you know, there's a lot more to video games than just backgrounds. So, but, you know, I stuck with it out of pure stubbornness and, you know, I learned a lot about making games. That's how that kind of started. So I think Long Way Home was kind of a real sort of playground of insanity that we could just sort of, you know, mess with. And in the end result is like some people describe it as a visual assault. So, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad, but, you know, we probably should have put the song out first before people kind of got their minds melted by the music video. But yeah, anyway.
But we have to talk a little bit about Over and Out because it is with Tatjana Shmailuk from Ginger. How did this collaboration happen? Did you meet her or did you ask her or how did this come true?
We met Ginger. We played in, we did a little run of shows in Ukraine and Russia, and Ginger was our support act. This was all the way, you know, quite a while ago. And sometimes, you know, when you sort of meet these bands, sometimes they really surprise you. And Ginger was one of those bands where we watched them and then we're like, you know, this is a great band. And then Tatjana came out and did her thing and we're like, whoa, like I don't think any of us had seen anything like that before. Mm. And most importantly, they were very nice, hospitable people. And they'd cited us as an influence, I think, in the somewhere. And we were kind of chuffed at that. And then they put out Pisces and it just exploded internationally. So we had this song Over and Out and we're like, because Nick, the singer, is quite a baritone voice. Mm. It was lacking a bit of urgency, you know, which comes from a higher register. So we thought, you know, why don't we get a female vocalist involved? And Tatjana was the first name that came up and we reached out and she was like, yep, I'll do it. And Nick kind of did the vocal arrangement and then worked with her. She tracked it in Ukraine, I believe, or maybe she tracked it in America and then she shot her music video part in Ukraine. And so the clip was across three countries in 3 years to make that.
Wow. Okay.
Because we shot the dream sequences all in Finland. And then the bookend stuff was done in Australia, in not far from Melbourne. So, yeah, it's just one of those things that we managed to kind of put together like a jigsaw puzzle.
Okay.
And, yeah, we're really proud of how it turned out and she loves it. And, yeah, so, I mean, it couldn't have really turned out better than what it did, I think. So
it is great. It's absolutely great. One question about this video. It is about dreams you can't really explain, right?
Yeah, a little bit. The video is centered around a kind of concept of searching for the definition of a dream. And I guess it expands to that existential sort of questioning that people have, which is a loose link to the call to the void concept. You know, it's that strange place where you don't know where things come from. You know, and I think the call to the void is like that. Like when you're on a bridge, what is that voice that says jump, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you don't, it reaffirms your will to live. It's dark, but the fact that we don't do the things that, you know, the fact that you become present with that strange voice beckoning you to do something crazy, you don't do it, kind of re-centers you into, you know, life in a way. It's a dark idea, but yeah, it kind of everything under the umbrella sort of seemed to make sense at the time. But when you watch it back, it's like, what is going what is going on? There's some kind of goblin behind a door. Is Vegemite on a finger? There's lots of, you know, what are they called? Those kind of what are those things called? Those sort of I can't remember. You know, in the door, where your latches. Yeah, they're like, it's kind of that search for meaning.
Laser sort.
Yeah, well, kinda. Lasers. We could go with that. But the endless search for meaning. I think everyone's kind of on that mission.
Okay. Do you have a dream you can't explain and wish to?
Yeah. I've got quite a few dreams that don't make any sense. I have some pretty strange dreams. I had a dream my brother had a baby. Okay. Made completely out of pizza meat, and he was holding it, and it was just kind of crumbling. And then I kind of said under my breath, like, how do you stay together? And then the baby just went and like eyeballed me and said, like this, and like started patting itself down like crazy. That was kind of disturbing.
That's a little disturbing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Most of my dreams are weird. I often dream I smash my own teeth out with a hammer in front of the mirror as well.
Okay.
I'm sure psychologists listening will be like, oh, you know, that's connected to, to something weird. But, yeah.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Thanks a lot for these
interviews. Yeah, I mean, you didn't know I was going to say that when you asked that question, I bet. But actually, I'll tell you one funny thing that my wife thinks is frightening is when you sleep, you're pretty much paralyzed usually, and you can't. That's why people don't often vocalize in a very coherent fashion. But I often dream that I'm like a monster and I'm scaring someone, but the only noise I can make is like so she'll wake up to me doing this and then I'll just crack up laughing in my dream like for 10 minutes. So I don't know if you can imagine sleeping with someone and you hear and then just laughter, maniacal laughter, and I'm just dead asleep the whole time.
I only know that without the laughter, so.
It's kind of like, it's not quite snoring. It's more like a satanic pig or something, you know, like, but the fact that I'm scaring the crap out of the person in my dream, I find hilarious. And then I literally laugh.
That is hilarious. Oh, yeah. We learn the deepest, darkest secrets here. Yes. So interesting. Well, I think one thing that, especially for 12-foot ninja, that is eminent is that you do pretty much everything by yourself. I think this record is the first one that's actually released in Germany. And you still were able to headline a festival, even though it's a mid-size, you know, headline a mid-size festival, sell out smaller venues in Germany, et cetera, et cetera, go on tour in Nepal and India and, you know, do all that. And so that is like, well, a lot of work, and I think a lot of determination. So where is that determination coming from? Because I know it, especially from Australian bands, very often.
I think because Australia is such a big country with such a small population, you have to work hard to even get out of the country. Like you've got to be, you know, and it costs quite a lot of money. So if you do manage to get out of the country and you head to Europe or America, you're there to work. Like you're there to work hard and do everything you possibly can. So I think that's why probably a lot of Aussie bands are really hardworking is because, you know, they've had to go through a lot to just be there, which is, you know, one of those advantages and disadvantages. Disadvantages because it's really difficult to do and you can't do it that frequently because it's so expensive, but an advantage because when you're there, you tend to seize every opportunity because you're working, you know, you're trying to make the most out of the fact that, you know, you've got there, you've come so far. Yeah, I mean, with us, I think we wanted to do things our way and hopefully reach, you know, like-minded people and build sort of, you know, a tribe internationally. And yeah, and it's worked out that way. I think the funny thing is, no matter what country people come from, we always have multiple things in common. Like they'll be quite open-minded musically. They'll have quite eclectic tastes visually. They'll often be into games or comic books or movies that we like. They'll have a quirky sense of humor, you know, so it's like meeting with friends wherever we go. We could make a dating app, actually, the 12-foot ninja dating app, and everyone would just be compatible, you know. Maybe we should become celebrants or something, and, you know, if the music doesn't work out, we'll just, you know, put people together and marry them off.
Yeah, that's a social influencer, right?
Yeah, just maybe like that's what it's called, yeah. Social influencer, without the hashtags.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think you're gaining a lot from the digital age, especially, especially in Australia, because you are so far away. So now, you know, you have the opportunity that people actually know about Australian bands. I mean, I've been into Australian bands now 10, 12 years, you know, or started with Carnival and Cork and all that kind of stuff. And actually 12 Foot Ninja as well. Yeah, before them, there were always this black box, you know, there were only few that came out. So I think that is a big, big gain for you.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it's cool. And there's a shit part as well in that, that often we get recognized outside of our own country. Like, you know, like Cog and Carnival and bands that you just mentioned are like well-known kind of internationally and do, you know, do great things for the Australian music representation internationally, but back home it's not as celebrated, I suppose. Football over here is the big deal.
Yeah, it's the same in Germany. Yeah. Don't worry. You know, no one likes German bands, especially if they sing English, you know, that's no.
Yeah, so. Yeah, interesting. So I've got a question for you. So German bands do better in Germany if they sing in German?
Feels like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
At least I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree. Yeah.
But a lot of your charts are dominated by English speaking bands, aren't they? Or would you say?
Yeah. That's a weird thing. Exactly. So it's.
But if a German band puts out a record, then it very fast gets at number one. For example, Die Ärzte, you know, Die Ärzte, Steve?
I think so.
Die Ärzte, they put out a record 2 weeks ago and just hit number one. I mean, there's one band, Rammstein is maybe different because they are also famous in America.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think, but I mean, that's history is always. Like I know when I was at uni, I studied a lot of sort of Latin music, and it was interesting to me that Brazil only kind of recognized bossa when the French said it was cool, you know, and this is going back to like early days. It's like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, of course it was cool. Like all along it was cool, but it needed sort of validation from somewhere else for it to be appreciated back home. To its full extent. Maybe that's just a thing, you know, that happens with people. Yeah, like my wife wishes I had a Scottish accent, and it's like wherever I go, people love the Aussie accent, but she's like, it's boring.
Well, but the Scottish accent you don't understand, so that I don't know if that's better.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's right. You talked already about it, Steve, that you don't like to listen to one only genre. And if you're listening to a 12 Ninja song, there's a lot going on. I mean, you have disco, offbeat, I don't know, funk, electro, to name just a few. I can't really imagine the songwriting process. Can you elaborate it? I mean, how is a typical 12 Ninja song produced? And have you ever turned down a song idea because it was too crazy, maybe?
How is it? It's difficult to explain how we write because it can happen in a multitude of ways. Like there's different stages. Like the first stage is ideas. So ideas primarily come from myself, Ro, the other guitar player, and Nick. So, and those ideas might be like anything from a verse and a chorus sketch to like a fully produced sort of song bed. Ro will often write a lot of cool music beds and then be very, he'll contribute a lot to the vocal melodies because he's such a, you know, clever arranger and stuff. Nick, he's been known to like create entire kind of song beds using, you know, he used to do it on his phone just with some app. I don't even know how he would do it. It's painfully slow, but he would just pump these things out. And then he sort of moved over to Ableton and was doing things on that. And then I guess by the time it gets to me or any ideas that I've written, it might be like I might go, you know, that bit there, I reckon we could improve and we rewrite that or we workshop that or we use it as a basis and build on it. Once we get the foundation right, I'll tend to produce it. So that will be like taking a verse and then reimagining it in a different genre. And a lot of the times, like I think over the years, the guys have started to preempt that process and actually present stuff in different genres. And then I'll just take it and, you know, sprinkle my sort of fairy dust on top of that. But it's really intuitive. It's difficult to kind of break down methodically, like, because I often aren't aware of what genre it will be when I start. It just kind of, it's like there's a, you know, there's some hints, like certain chord progressions lend themselves to certain genres, like, you know, because for a genre to be a genre, it has certain identifiers. Like, it's like for a hamburger to be a hamburger, you know, you need to have bread at least, usually, and then like some kind of beef patty perhaps, and then, you know, you can expect lettuce, tomato, and probably some condiments and maybe pickles or something. So for a genre to be a genre, like, they adhere to the same rules. For reggae to be reggae, there are certain things that make reggae reggae, and one of those things could be the harmony, you know, the chords. It could be the melody, and then it's the tonal stuff, it's the rhythmic principles, and then I just kind of mess with it, and in the end, it comes out the way it does. It's a bit, the best explanation I can come up with is it's like putting together a jigsaw puzzle. How do you put together a jigsaw puzzle? You know, you get the pieces and you start trying to put them together, and you might have a corner here and then start over there. And eventually, if you keep working on it, you end up with a picture. That's my best shot at explaining the process. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people want to hear we're like some kind of Voltron and like, one guy's the funk guy, one guy's the metal guy, and we all come together in this one thing, you know, and magic, you know, but that's really not what it is.
Okay, yeah, okay.
So disappointed now.
Yeah, I know. I wish I should just make it up. I should just be like, we just, you know, we've got these frogs over here and we eat the frogs and they're poisonous, and then we end up on a different dimension. And there's a local kangaroo that comes over. His name's Greg, and he jump in his pouch and we all ride off over the hills with Greg, and then the ideas just come.
I see. So much better. Much better. Yeah. No, but I think this reimagining a part in another genre, I think that for me is a very essential piece. You know, that's something I think a lot of people just can't do.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think that raises a really good point that I've been talking a lot about with this album is when we're playing different genres, we're not joking. I think that's the key point, is we're really trying to honor those styles, you know, and do them justice. So, you know, whether it's funk or any kind of Latin, like anything that falls under the Latin umbrella, which is many, many, many genres, we're trying to do them justice and respect them. And maybe that's the one difference. If I've heard metal bands playing funk, it often sounds horrible because it's just, it's a metal guitar playing kind of, you know, ninth chords, and the drums are still metal, like, and everything's metal, but it's kind of funk and it just never kind of works. So I think it's about sort of just paying the appropriate respect to the original, the things that define that genre. And then if you do that, you know, it's going to come out good, hopefully.
So far, it did.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Hopefully.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
It is also very interesting that it does not sound like patchwork, you know? And I think this is mainly because also of your singer, because he can jump through all the genres. I don't know. This is fascinating.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think the reason for that is the song is written in its entire, like we have what we call like an acoustic guitar test.
Yeah.
We need to be able to play the song on acoustic guitar with a strong melody and lyric. And if it can exist like that, then we know we've got a good song. And basically you can put it any, you can do anything with, you know, any section. Yeah. And yeah, Nick's vocals are a consistent element, but also we'll look at like smoothing transitions so that it's less kind of abrupt and jolty, unless we want that effect. You know, sometimes it's cool to have a sudden, it's like you crash into a wall and you're into a different place. It's honestly something that's just kind of evolved and been refined, and every album is kind of a learning exercise. I think it makes it, it's probably annoying for the guys because I'm a pathological kind of autopsy guy. Like I just want to kind of dissect everything and go, that worked, that was really cool. And then, you know, build this shorthand for the next time and go, okay, let's try that. That, you know, it's really just experimenting, but because you've experimented a lot, you get better at kind of choosing where to go. Yeah, but it would be difficult to kind of point out all of the failures because there's many, many, many. Like, you know, there's so many songs that we'll just throw in the bin. It's through that process. Like in Prometheus or whatever, you know, when he walks into the, he sees all of the failed aliens in the tanks, in the formaldehyde tanks, you know, the ones that didn't quite make it. If we had the song version of that, we'd just have warehouses full of deformed mutants floating in formaldehyde tanks.
What's the first concert for you you're going to play now in the future?
Ah, man, I don't even, I think we're doing an Australian festival that will cover multiple states with a whole bunch of bands.
Uncaged.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. And that will be it's, cool.
That's the beginning. It's in January, right?
Yeah. What? And that's like the biggest kind of thing, I guess, in our, you know, the rock scene for the whole country. You know, we'll start the next year. So hopefully it's a start of a much better year. And then, you know, not long after that, we head over to Europe.
That sounds good.
I thought you were asking me what my first concert was. And I was,
now,
I
can, now, hey, you can tell us that as well.
Now you can tell us. No, I want to know.
I think it was Neil Diamond.
Okay. So, yeah. Thanks a lot, Steve, for having you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks for having me, and thanks for allowing me to, you know, infiltrate the ears of your listeners.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to see how that goes. Yeah, we'll probably do a translated version, you know, online in just writing, you know, for those who don't speak English. But
I thought you were going to get someone to do my voice, and I'm like, can you make them sound really funny, like?
Well, we can try that.
Get
too,
someone with a really high pitch, like get someone with a really angry voice. Make everything sound angry and dark. Dark.
Oh, I have someone.
Yeah,
for that. I would have someone. You know,
excellent.
The high pitched voice I would do myself because my dog likes it if I speak in this high pitched voice. You know, you come. So that's, you know, but yeah, so angry I can't do, you know, I'm never angry, so.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I keep saying that in every German interview, Dark, that show, so good.
Yeah.
I watched it in German and I don't even speak German. I loved it.
Yeah. But it's always better to watch in original language.
Yeah. No, it was spectacular. Heaps of cool German shows coming out. You know, we're actually seeing more of this stuff in Australia because of Netflix, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fun. There was another one I watched with one of the same actors. I can't remember what it was called, but that was good as well. Anyway, I'm trailing off. I won't keep you.
Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Ich hoffe, ihr hattet so viel Spaß wie wir. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüss.